Welcome to the Amazon Legends Podcast, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became powerful sellers, also experts specializing in helping sellers, and both former and current Amazon employees who will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here's your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today originally wanted to be a lawyer, but quickly decided against it and then went into real estate, became successful. And I guess this was part of his search and he finally found his groove. Today, he is the founder of Brand Uni, which is a resource for selling online. And when he is not working, he's passionate about playing any sport that when I asked him, what is it that you like? He says, well, any sport that has a round ball in it. So, you know, it's an interesting way to put it. I guess, you know, you have rugby, you have American football, so it's more than round. So with that, everybody meet my guest, Ben Donovan. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate the invite. Good to be here. And I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, me too. So you're going to share with us some real good stuff. So when you and I discussed, first of all, let me back up. We had a conversation earlier today and the share of online retail came up in the entire retail business. And it's today it's 15%.
Yeah.
So what that means is we still have a long way to go for e-commerce to grow. So e-commerce is going to grow. There's no doubt about it. So, and what seems to be happening is if you're going to sell products direct to consumer, well, you are either going to sell your own product or you're going to buy and resell somebody else's product. Mm-hmm. And there's money to be made in both models. This is the right way to do things and the wrong way to do things. But I think that I would be right in saying that you would build a greater value for your company if you built your own brand. So therefore, there is a huge demand in coming up with a product idea and then building your brand, launching it. So it's all about launch, launch, launch. How do we launch? What's the best way? How do we rank up? Blah, blah. Yep. But launch is a one-time deal, right? So you launch. And then comes the next phase. And then that's where, okay, what do we do now? So that's what you are going to share some wisdom with us, right? So tell us what comes after launch.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Nick. If you just sell a commodity product without an audience, without a brand, then you really are only building a cash flow business. But if you build a brand, if you build sustainability beyond the launch, then you can build a brand and you can build a business that's not just cash flow in the present, but it's also a potential cash out in the future, an asset for the future. And yeah, that's what I'm really passionate about. And that's what I'm building. And so, you know, really is obviously important to launch products well. But after that, of course, what you really need to do is build sustainability, diversify how you're selling that product, build a brand, build an audience. You know, there's lots there that we could get into today. But, you know, in essence, I'm a big believer in that you can't just sell products for cash flow. You can, and that's a legitimate business. And I know lots of people that do that. But I think, you know, the more I do business, the more I do life, I want to do things with my time that compounds. You know, I want to do something now that continues to compound over time and grows and grows and grows, not just work today that pays me tomorrow. And then I have to work again the next day to find the paycheck for the following day, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So you're talking about building some kind of equity in the business. So I guess the easiest way to explain this is if you buy something for a dollar and you sell it for $10, you made $9, but you made that $9 today. And the value of what you have done is exactly $9. Mm-hmm. It can only go down, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It won't go up. So that's it. So if you are in the business of generating cash flow, you are putting a limit to the value of what you're building. But if you're building a brand, then let's take the same example. you manufacture it for a dollar, you sell it for $9. You've got that $9, but now you've also got the value of that sale as the proof of your product.
Yeah.
So therefore, the value can only go up. And of course, it can also go down if you do a terrible job or you don't really create awareness for it. So that's what you're referring to, right? As far as building.
Yeah, absolutely. To your point there, your example of that $9, it's worth $9 in a cash flow business, but in an asset business, you know, that could be worth 36, 45, 54, you know, don't do public maths, they say, but, you know, any number of multiple times that, because you know, you're building up, if you can build up a clear history of profitable sales, then somebody's always going to be interested in buying that business, whether it's in fashion with aggregators or not, there will always be buyers for those kind of businesses. So, you know, the more you can build up brand equity, the more you can build, you know, diversification, lots of different things, of course, go into that. But, you know, I personally, have a strong desire, like I say, to do things with my time that compounds. I've become, you know, very passionate over the years, having spent a lot of my life in a career, in a job where I traded a lot of time for money and didn't get to spend the time I wanted with my kids, didn't get to do the sports with the round balls, you know, didn't get to do those things that I enjoyed. And so I've become a lot more passionate rather than just having my own business or working for myself. It's building assets online that compound over time. And so, because that's what's going to create time freedom that I think so many people are looking for.
Oh. So share with us some tips for building that sustainability for your business.
Yeah, I think there's obviously lots of things we could go into that are going to help with that. I think that building an audience is going to be the number one thing that any brand builder can do. And so, you know, a lot of my audience over the years, and likely yours as well, Nick, because I know you're very good on Amazon, and Amazon is a great sales channel to be on, and I absolutely believe that. But we really should stop seeing Amazon, I believe, as a sales channel, just a pure sales channel, and see it more as an acquisition channel that's there to get our brand in front of people. But then on the back end of those sales, we've got to work harder as entrepreneurs to offer people that are buying our products a reason to stay in our ecosystem. So that includes, of course, following up with people after they purchase, subscribing them to our communications, all of those kind of things are part of building that audience. But, I know from our conversation previously, the thing that I think stuck out to you was, what we have really been working on over the last 12 months really now is to build organic traffic from other sources other than just Amazon. Amazon has been and will continue to be a beast for traffic. You know, there's crazy amounts of volume on Amazon, but we've all seen how we can't rely on that from one day to the next. Actually, a strong business is one that has traffic coming from many different streams. And so, we've really been working hard at, building up sales on our own website and using SEO particularly to really drive a lot of that traffic that's coming to the website. So, I think it's a lot about diversification. It's a lot about audience building. And happy to get into details on any of those. Yeah.
So what you are suggesting is this is after the launch. So you've achieved certain level of sales volume, and you don't have to worry about launching anymore. You're generating revenue, you're advertising optimized, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's phase two, where you are, I think you are suggesting that bring your website into the mix. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I think everybody's different, and it depends on your skill set, how confident you are. I think, of course, the first thing that you should do is get some revenue. You shouldn't try and run before you walk, and you should put most of your energy into the things that are going to drive the most momentum. And initially, generally speaking, that's going to be launching a product on Amazon. But I would suggest, you know, don't start looking at building an audience or growing and diversifying your brand 6 months after you launch. Think about that even before you launch. You know, with the first product you launch, let's say you order 500 units of a private label product, 1,000 units. You know, that's 500, 1,000 people that you're going to come into contact with that could potentially subscribe to an email list, join a newsletter, or anything like that, that you can then continue to market to moving forwards. Because what I see too many Amazon sellers make the mistake of is they think, well, I'll just launch a new product and I'll let Amazon and the volume that Amazon brings me do the work of those other products. And that's all well and good. However, that gets more and more expensive. Amazon continue to limit how you can launch products. PPC on Amazon continues to get more expensive. The data shows us this. And so to continue to be successful over the next 2 or 3 years, it's going to be the people that build an audience that are going to be able to launch new products to that audience that are going to continue to succeed. So, you know, in terms of how we do that, we would right off the bat from day one, we would have, an insert in our product. And now this is, you know, relatively basic. I get that. But it's what you do on the back end that can really separate you from your competitors. So something we do that's different to most people is with, say, an insert in a product we sell on Amazon, we're not asking anybody for a review because very few people actually read an insert and then go straight away and read a review. Our insert is very simple, just simply offering a free gift. We just tell someone to scan the QR code to claim their free gift. Don't tell them what the free gift is so that we can change it on the back end. Then they come into a flow. We've tested a few different things. At the moment, we're using ManyChat. We are potentially going to sort of test a new sort of system, but then we can hit a number of objectives there. You know, once someone comes into our flow, they can sign up to our email newsletter. They can sign up to SMS updates for when we launch products. They can follow us on social media. Lots of different objectives there because of the flexibility. So that's something I would suggest all Amazon sellers start with right from the outset because, you know, we're seeing really good sign-up rates to this, you know, around 10% opt-in rates from products we're selling. And so if you sold 1,000 products, you could have 100 people on your list then that are ready and waiting for the next time you launch a product, which, you know, just then makes that product launch so much easier.
Yeah, this package insert is definitely a good idea. And I had another guest and he shared the same strategy about not just leaving it, but I just heard you say something very interesting. I never heard it put that way. So you said that 500 to 1,000 units that you may decide to produce, then you launch it on Amazon. That's 500 to 1,000 people that you will come into your product will come into contact with.
Yeah.
And that's your audience, right?
Exactly.
I mean, because if they bought it, provided that they don't return it, a small percentage will, but nevertheless. These are people that you have come into contact with through your product. So what you are suggesting is do something to keep them engaged post-purchase.
Exactly.
And then have activity around what you are doing, what you're going to be launching, while offering value.
Exactly.
So that's when you think about it, it's no big deal. But when you think about it that way, where your product becomes the vehicle for you to build an audience, and if you are a private label, having a following for a brand that has a lot more value than the sale you're going to make, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what it is. Okay, so let's talk about package insert. So construct for us, what is a good package insert that complies with Amazon's terms of service?
Yeah, obviously there's a little bit of disagreement about what is compliant with Amazon's terms of service. I sit in the camp of having a website address or an email to contact inside your packaging or on your packaging is fine by me. We do that. I don't lose any sleep overnight doing that because there are you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of brands that do exactly that and don't get any issues on Amazon. Where the issue with inserts and compliance is if you are incentivizing reviews, if you are trying to feed people in one way or another, if they've had a positive experience to leave a review, if they've had a negative experience to reach out to your customer service, that kind of thing has been outlined by Amazon as non-compliant. But we have done lots of different types of inserts over the years, but the one that drives the most results for us, and we get a constant stream of new people joining our audience all the time, it is just a very, very simple insert that just screams free gift right from when the person opens the packaging. They just get a little insert that says claim your free gift, and they can either scan the QR code, or there's just a very simple website address set up. So we just set one up saying with a subdomain. It sounds technical. It's relatively easy to set up, but you could set something more simple up if you wanted to. But if you have a small amount of technical knowledge, you can just set up something like, you know, gift.yourdomain.com. The thing is, you want to make it as easy as possible for the user to be able to sign up. So the QR code, lots of people post COVID have, you know, learned how to use a QR code, so it's much easier. But also there's a web address on there as well that then redirects to that Facebook Messenger flow. And that then takes them opens up into a Messenger flow that says, hey, thanks for buying our product. We really appreciate it. And then says, you know, the free gift is this. And the beauty of doing it that way, rather than a fixed insert that says, claim a voucher, claim a discount or anything like that. If you just say free gift, you can change that to anything you want. You know, we've tested physical products, we've tested digital like ebooks. You can change it to anything you want. And so there's a very much a flexibility in that for you as well.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing that we've done is, first of all, as far as constructing a package insert,
yeah.
I divide it up into several different pieces of value, so to speak, to deliver. First and foremost, that package insert, how it looks is key, right? Because that's all about your image. So don't put some lousy card. Don't, you know, pay a printer or pay a designer to create something that represents your brand with your brand colors, your logo, and everything else, so that it looks respectable and sophisticated. I'm sure, you know, all of us have smartphones these days. You know, if you buy, a lot of us have Apple. So if you buy an Apple product, you know the kind of box it comes in. It's, you know, it doesn't look, you know, cheap. It makes you feel good. It makes you trust the company. So the insert has to look like that. So picking the right kind of stock for it and things like that. The next thing is, we always put something about how they get the most out of the product they just purchased. Some tips. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, when you're using this, do that. So that they would have never thought about it. But the company that is offering the product, sharing those tips. What you are saying is, here is how you get more out of it. So now suddenly it's more value for them. It's not just what they paid. So now that builds the confidence to them further. And right underneath, then we do what you suggested. We don't say free gift, but we make it specific. It could be like unboxing instructions. If it's a more complex thing, scan your QR code and watch unboxing instructions or something, claim your warranty, whatever. So offer something that is free. Mm-hmm. And then on the reverse side, and both sides look the same. So you don't know which side is front, which side is back. And on the reverse side, one part is give us your honest review. We would like to hear from you. Give us your honest review. We do not ask for positive. We don't, nothing specific like that. And we say, give us your honest review. So, and then we put the instructions, 1, 2, 3. This is how you do it. And then in the bottom part, we then say returning customer discount. So if you want to buy, use this coupon code, buy any one of our items on Amazon, you will receive this as a returning customer. So that is the kind of package insert that I usually recommend. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about it? What are your thoughts?
I think that covers a lot of bases. The only thing, the route that we would differ on is that there is a lot of that that we can cover on the back end once someone engages in conversation. You know, so the asking for the review, the following us on social media, all of that kind of stuff. Once we've engaged them in conversation, because they're a lot more likely to do to follow a request if they have engaged in conversation, is what we have found. I think obviously it is a little bit product dependent. And if it's a technical product, having some instructions in the product, I think is great. I would just usually then have them separate. Like we have some products where there are instructions needed and there's like a separate leaflet, booklet, whatever that goes in separately. And then the little card, the free gift flag just goes on top of the rest of the stuff. But yeah, I agree with you in that it doesn't have to be a free gift. It just needs to be something that's going to be, we in marketing, we call it a lead magnet, something that's going to pull them in, that's going to get them started on a conversation. And then you can achieve multiple objectives. If you just send them to like a landing page to put in their email, that's a start, but then you can achieve multiple objectives by then following up in conversation. And that's why I love the mini chat, the messenger flows that you can use, just because of its flexibility. But there's no perfect solution, really. There's weaknesses towards it. But
I think what you are adding onto this, onto the package insert idea, really, that's the most significant thing. The way I hear it is adding ManyChat is a big deal, because there it's no longer one direction, it's two directional, right? Yeah. So that they are talking to you, you're talking to them. You can program that, of course. So mm-hmm. you can have bots and things. So ManyChat is programmable. So that's a great addition. So, I mean, there you go. I mean, this is the perfect way. Now, I'm going to share with you something I heard from another guest.
Okay.
So it will actually address two things. Number one, the controversy around sharing your website address.
Yep.
He said, package insert. I don't like to put it on the package insert because, you don't want to do it to be clean. When they scan the QR code, they'll go to the website anyway. But more important, put it on your packaging. Nobody is going to say anything. It's part of your packaging. Put your www, whatever. Put your own on your packaging, and that's fine, because your product is sold not only on Amazon but everywhere else.
Exactly.
Yeah. The second thing that I heard was this gentleman who is, he was giving me some numbers. I forget, but he said, when somebody lands on that page after scanning the QR code, up comes the flywheel to offer a gift. And of course, in that flywheel, there is up to 90% discount.
Mm-hmm.
So he says that he tested several ways for people to participate, and the flywheel was the best.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, in order to spin the wheel, you have to put your email.
Yeah.
So now you capture their email. Landing them on a page to enter the email, I would not do that, mainly because you don't want to take a chance. Amazon may one day decide, we don't want this. But what he does to spin the wheel, they have to enter the email, and then once the wheel turns and then it issues the coupon code, only available for the next 30 minutes. So right there, He is capturing their email address. He's offering them whatever the flywheel comes up with. And then incentivizing to make a purchase. Right there, it's an upsell.
Yep.
So I thought that was genius. What do you think?
Yeah, spin to win, sometimes it's referred to as, and it's very, very popular, very effective. It's one of the, in our tests, one of the highest sort of opt-in rates on our website, you know, in terms of a pop-up, is like a spin to win a discount. It can be sometimes lower quality in terms of the emails you collect on an ongoing basis. But it's very effective at getting those email opt-ins, yeah, for sure.
Okay, so we have, it's 25 minutes since we started talking. We've given exactly what to do to take every one of those product purchases and turn them into your audience. So that will address the sustainability. So of course, you have to have some kind of a program, you know, once they make the purchase or whatever. So share with us some successful programs to keep that engagement going.
Yeah, obviously it depends on the product and the niche you're in. But I think certainly what we do is we try and build an audience of people that are passionate around the topic that our products, the problems that our products solve, you know, whether that be fitness equipment or toys or kitchen products. You have to understand the customer it is that you're trying to sell to. Again, 4, 5, 6 years ago, selling on Amazon without any knowledge of a customer, just selling a product because the numbers worked, that was fine. But now you really do have to get into the mind of your customer. At Brand Builder University, we have this training, we call it the product potency formula. And, you know, you've got to have products, of course, number one, but you've got to solve problems for a distinct group of people. And we really believe that, you know, in the middle of that is the sweet spot of a real brand, because you are really identifying the person whose problem your product is solving. When you get all three of those together, it's a real potent mix. So I think it's rather than just selling a product and then now what do I talk about? If you understand the customer's problems day in, day out, week in, week out, then you can easily create content that helps them. So we have a toy brand that's like educational toys, and we would once a week put out content that's going to help parents educate their kids in a fun way that doesn't involve screens, for instance. That's kind of the big thing that we focus on. And it doesn't need to take a lot of time, because these days with so much content on social media, etc., you can almost sort of crowdsource the content. We do that a lot. We'll reach out to people that are posting content. Do you mind if we share this with our audience? They get free shares with their audience. They love that with our audience. So they love that. More exposure, and it's not really much work for us, but we try and make sure that at least once a week then we are, you know, in the email inbox and on social media sharing like an activity that's going to be helpful for the parents that week. So that's obviously an example. Fitness easily lends itself to that. Kitchen recipes, you know, it really is product dependent, of course, but you have to understand, really take time to understand the customer that you're selling to, the problems that exist within that sphere of that product, or the problems that product is solving, and how then you can create ongoing content that's going to continue to help these people solve these problems. Because what you'll find in that is more product ideas. They'll ask you, do you have this kind of product, or I'm really struggling with this aspect? And that's where your product then is really going to develop over time.
So that, tell us again what you repeated, because I find that so straight to the point, those three things.
Yeah.
What you called it something, brand.
Brand Builder University, which is the training.
But you called the methodology something.
Product potency formula.
Product potency formula. Tell us what that is again.
So it's basically like a trifecta of, selling products that solve problems for a specific group of people.
Okay, so solving a specific problem for a specific group of people with your product.
Yeah.
And of course, Now that add that onto your audience effort, that's going to give you really the next thing that you mentioned, which is diversification, new product ideas, creating different variations of it potentially, or even improving it in a way that will give you a higher price point or whatever. So this really is the formula. This reminds me of my favorite saying. You know, I repeat this. Maybe you've come across it in other episodes if you listen to it. But strategy is the slowest route to victory. But tactics without strategy is noise before defeat. So what you are saying is don't just throw a bunch of products at Amazon and then do keyword research and spend money on advertising. Yes, you will generate sales, but at some point, without really having a solid strategy behind it, it's going to die down and then you're going to have to start again. So put a real thought behind what it is that you're building with your product potency formula. What is the product? And then build your following through engagement. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, for sure. And too many people try and do build a business with just two of those. You know, they try and sell products that maybe solve a problem, but they don't understand the person that they're selling to. So then they don't grow a brand and every product is, it feels a bit fractured and it's not as efficient as it could be. And then some people try and sell a product to a group of people, but it doesn't really solve a problem. It's just like a maybe a luxury, or there's already 100 other versions of the exact same product. So if you're not solving a problem better than the competition, why would those people buy that from you? And you know, then there are, of course, people that are passionate about a group of people and the problems that they have, but they don't know how to get a product that's going to solve that. And so if you only have two parts of that, you know, I kind of illustrate it as like a Venn diagram. You know, if you only have two of those circles in that Venn diagram, then it's going to be very hard for you to grow and sustain over the long term. But if you have all of those three things together, that's when you can kind of find that sweet spot of something that solves problems, people love, and you can build a really good brand on the back of.
So this brings up a question for me. So as entrepreneurs, you know how entrepreneurs are. Entrepreneurs are always looking for a solution for a problem. So there's got to be a better way, right? So that's the start. So, you know, there's got to be a better way. Okay. So fine. But how do you test or assess before you suddenly start a business idea around it that does this have enough commercial value? It may solve a problem, but does this have enough commercial value? What is the best way to assess that?
Always start with demand and the metrics that surround demand. You know, there's a saying that pioneers get shot, but settlers get rich. And, you know, there are some emotions surrounding, you know, the whole process of people coming into other people's land, but just the principle of if you are first to a land, then there's every chance that's going to be very dangerous for you. Whereas if there's other people that have already trodden a path for you, shown the way for you, then it's much easier to come in and scoop up some of the value that is to be offered there. And so, you know, we would always say start with demand. Do your research in terms of it. There's lots of ways, of course, with Amazon. There's BSR. There are softwares you can use. There's Google Trends. There's so many different ways these days to be able to ascertain demand, but you have to start with demand. If you've got a product idea and nobody else in the world is doing it, there's a 99% chance it's because it won't make any money. Of course, there are the ideas that are revolutionary and are innovative. But most people don't create those ideas because they are unique. And I would always say, if you're a new entrepreneur that wants to get their feet wet, run your own business, test something out, start with demand We don't want to create demand in a place that doesn't exist. We want to steer existing demand towards our product by finding a product that we could do a better job of, solve customers' complaints about those existing solutions. If you want to innovate on existing demand so that you can know that there's going to be a market for it, then once you've got your kind of feet wet with entrepreneurialism and you want to grow your innovative side, then that's when you can have maybe more license to do it, I would say.
Yeah, so this brings up the competition. So, you know, nobody likes competition. And at the same time, you don't want to get into a space where there is no competition, because that means there is no market, right?
Yep, so exactly.
What is the right balance here? How do you determine that, okay, this is worth me getting into?
Yeah, good, great question. There's a couple of things. Obviously, with the basics of Amazon, you know, you would look at a market where there's not too many reviews. We talk about three levels of domination. And so that is your brand domination. I don't want to go into a market where one brand dominates, because their name becomes synonymous with the product, you know, like a Hoover. You know, I don't want to go into those markets. I don't want to go into a market where there is product domination, where one product, one SKU is taking the lion's share of the revenue, because again, it's dominating and it's too hard then to come into that. And then number three, it's review domination. We don't want to go into a market where every single product has 10,000 plus reviews, because unless Amazon changes the review system, it's going to be very hard to compete with that. And so what we want to do is find markets where those three aren't too high, the levels of domination on those aspects. But you know, whereas that used to be the main thing, because if you found a product that was doing good sales but had low reviews, then you just launch it and you'd make a bunch of sales. It's not quite the way anymore, because there are it's easier to get reviews on Amazon, you know, volume of reviews these days. And it's also, you know, there have been lots and lots of products that have been around longer. So the opportunity now is for people that can look at existing demand and actually do good, honest entrepreneurialism and research how I can improve on these current products. And the best way to do that is simply by looking at the reviews that people are already leaving about the product. You know, what are they saying that they like? What are they saying they don't like? And really try and build a product that solves the problems that people have with the existing versions of that product, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Perfect. It makes perfect sense. In fact, there's a strategy. I'm sure you're familiar with the tool Helium 10. Mm-hmm. So if you use Helium 10 browser extension, you can fetch the reviews of a listing, and then it will give you an analysis of the phrases used.
Exactly.
So you can get a sentiment around those, you know. Usually the way I use it for my clients is I get the positive ones and then I get the negative ones. Exactly. And then those negative ones you can incorporate into your product as things not to do. And then you emphasize that in your listing subliminally. And then the good ones, you just harp on them, you know, how yours is better. So reviews are great. And also the questions, you know, the questions and answers on every product, they are also useful, but there's no way to fetch them. But it's a good idea to obviously keep an eye.
Yeah, absolutely.
So share with us some more of your methods for diversification. What is the best way to diversify? Because there is this danger of, you know, when a product becomes successful, and the entrepreneur becomes successful, and success means revenue coming in, and things are kind of settling down, becoming stable. Product extension is not always a good thing, right? It could work. So share with us some best practices for diversification.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really impacted by James Clear's book, Atomic Habits. You know, it's a very popular book, and I'm sure you know many of your listeners may have read it. In that book, he talks about the growth of agriculture and about how it faced much more resistance when agricultural methods tried to grow from like on a north to south plane, whereas they had much easier routes to growth on an east to west plane. So for instance, you know, across Europe and Russia, the same kind of agricultural methods grew very quickly. But if you tried to grow the same methods from North to South America, then that would be very difficult because of the change of climate, because it was a lot more effort to get the same results. And he gives that, illustration for something he calls the law of least effort. And as human beings, we are wired to do things that get the job done with the least amount of effort. And, you know, I thought, well, we should apply this to building brands, building businesses. We shouldn't make this harder than it has to be. And so therefore, what is the law of least effort when it comes to building a brand? And so where we have kind of settled on how our process works is that we try and maximize the momentum that we have with the business. And so firstly, before because what a lot of Amazon sellers particularly will get tempted to do is they sell a product and it starts making a few thousand, $10,000 a month maybe, and they get excited by that and they want to launch more products. Now that's good, but first and foremost, our process is actually more marketing for that existing product. And then secondly, more marketplaces. Before we even look at more products, we try and diversify and maximize the opportunity with those products that we are already selling. Because with that existing product, you know, you don't have to find a new supplier, create a whole new supply chain. You don't have to meet a new minimum order quantity for a new product you haven't tested in the market. You don't have to launch out without any data. You know, you've already got data. You've already got a supplier. If you want to launch with more marketing on your own website, more marketplaces, then you simply can order more units of the same product. And so it's going to give you a lot better return in the short term before you then throw all of your energy. And I'm personally speaking from my own mistakes, because when I started out several years ago, I tried to launch so many products quickly. I saw this crazy demand on Amazon. I saw the amount of sales you could make. So I thought, I need to launch as many products as soon as I possibly can, because this thing's crazy. But in doing that, I really slowed my growth down because I created for myself all kinds of cash flow problems. And most people don't have a huge amount of capital to put into a new business. So what you really need to do is maximize the momentum with that first product, with more marketing, more marketplaces. For instance, selling in Amazon US, take it to Canada, take it to Mexico, take it to Europe, because you've already got the listing written. You've already got the supply chain. You've already got all of the graphic assets. You've got 90% of the work done. You just need to ship some units to a new marketplace and open up a new 5%, 10%, 20% of revenue. Not quite as sexy as launching a new product, but it's going to give you that platform for growth that really helps you then diversify in time.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is before adding new products, make sure that you maximize your distribution for the product. And especially if it's just Amazon you're doing. Amazon obviously is, I believe, the last time I checked was 60% of online retail. Obviously that's a big market, but there is still another 40%. And then as you put it, there are also international marketplaces. I've had a few guests on the show. So for anybody listening, you can check out the guests who are all about international expansion. Each country takes 6 months to launch because they have all these crazy regulations, and especially in Europe, you know, you like to charge taxes and you like to. Not that they don't like taxes in America, but there's two camps there. So it's a heavy regulation and a lot of work up front. And by the way, a lot of more upfront cash outlay because of the VAT requirement on importation. So it is definitely another marketplace will add on to your revenue. But it's not something you can just flip the switch and do. It does take time to build. However, bringing to your website, bringing to other marketplaces, definitely much, much higher return. And by the way, in the process, you'll be increasing your production capacity, which will help you negotiate better prices with your manufacturer, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So that's improved margin. Improved margin means more cash. That means that when you're ready, finally, you have a lot more cash, and you can do all this without really having to have inventory on multiple different SKUs.
Exactly.
No, it's a great piece of advice. You know, it's less is more, as they say, right? So
less.
So what you are suggesting is diversification in distribution, not necessarily diversification in the product pool.
Yeah, I'm a believer in diversification in the product pool over time, but I've just seen too many people rush in to try and grow quickly when you need to take time to understand the cash flow dynamics of a physical product business. It can be complicated. It can be challenging. So you do need to take your time. And so compounding on what is already working, and is going to grow your revenue for, relatively speaking, a smaller financial investment is usually the right option. Of course, it's different for everyone. And for some people, it may be launching new products and, you know, launching different marketplaces may not be something they want to do. It's not a cookie cutter. You know, it's just consider all of these options before. But that would be my recommendation.
Yeah. So share with us, Ben, some of the numbers that every seller should watch as metrics. Of course, everybody wants to watch their top line and their profit. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about from management standpoint to manage their business. What numbers should they be watching?
From a top level, high level position of their business, I think obviously aside from the ones you mentioned, of course, revenue, profit are really important. Overall conversion rate is something that we keep an eye on. With our products, portfolio, there's three metrics we really look at product level, and that is impressions, clicks, and conversions. If you can always be getting your product in front of more eyeballs, more impressions, and if you can then be getting a higher click-through rate onto your products, and then finally getting a higher conversion rate, always be improving those three metrics, then you're going to continue to make more and more money over time. Of course, then you just have to factor in costs, in there to be able to make sure those sales are profitable. Day in, day out in the trenches, those are the three numbers I'm always working on. How can I get my product in front of more people? That's more impressions. How can I get more people to click on our detail pages, more clicks, and how can I get more sales by improving our conversion rate? Those are the three numbers I'm continually looking at.
Okay. I'm going to share with you two more.
Yeah, yeah.
And you tell me what you think about it.
Sure.
One of them is nothing new, but people don't really, because it's complex and they don't really have the infrastructure to do it. But it is, to me, it is the most important for any business that carries inventory. The second one, it belongs to me. I came up with the concept and we have something in the works to actually report it. So the first one is, I ask several people, including like private equity people, what would you call this metric? And they could not give me a name. It's not defined, like, ROI and things like that. So I call it return on inventory. It's a different ROI. Mm-hmm. What that means is your net liquidity, that means net profit you're generating every month, divide by the total amount of inventory you're carrying in stock. Mm-hmm. This is the most important. So think about this. If you're generating $10,000 a month net, so if you made a $10,000 net profit, the chances are, let's assume that that's like 20% of your sales. Let's assume.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a very good number, very hard to achieve. But let's be optimistic, and let's say it's 20%. Mm-hmm. And then let's assume your cost is very competitive. You're buying it very competitively, and let's call that 20%. Very hard to achieve. It's going to be more than likely, like maybe 30, 35%. Let's call that 20%. So that means they bought $10,000 worth of merchandise. So in other words, during that month that you made $10,000 in net profit, you had to have $10,000 worth of inventory to be able to sell it, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you're not going to just run out of stock at the end of the month and then put another batch. You're going to lose sales. So therefore, it's a good idea. At best, you're going to have 2 months worth of inventory. So that's 20,000. So now your return on inventory is 50%. Well, guess what? This really never happens because your factory is going to have a lead time. So you're going to carry 3-4 times what you're selling every month. So now, keep in mind, we started with a very good number as margin, 20%. Even sticking to those numbers, if you're carrying 3 months worth of inventory, that means that for 3 months, that 30% inventory return ratio, for 3 months, you cannot put a penny in your pocket because that's going to go to financing your inventory. Of course, the numbers are never like as good as this. So they are usually floating around net margins around maybe 10, 15%. Mm-hmm. Cost of goods floating around 30%. So I had a gentleman a few weeks ago as a guest. They did the analysis. It was month 15 of a new launch where they saw positive cash flow for the first time.
Yeah. And this is what new sellers don't fail to realize sometimes, is that there needs to be a commitment to reinvesting and compounding your finances over time. You know, the first year, certainly I always advise people that we work with, do not touch anything for a year. Reinvest. Yeah, all the reasons you mentioned here. Yeah.
So the second metric is the organic traffic ratio. What that means is this is reported company-wide as well as at SKU level. Mm-hmm. How many organic clicks is every paid click bringing you?
Yeah, that's a good metric, yeah.
You can back this up, you know, from an advertising budget all the way. So you can reverse engineer your advertising strategy if you know this number. And by the way, this number, I also shopped this number around aggregators. And I asked them, would you guys find it useful to know this metric to value a business? I said, absolutely. Is this available? Yeah. So in fact, you know, it will be available in our SaaS platform, but it's something you can, of course, figure this out yourself, but it has to be a real-time metric, especially with fluctuations, you know, where you're doing things and it's affecting. So I find that the numbers are always there to tell the story, right? So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, some great thoughts for sure.
So tell us, Ben, clearly, you know, you're from England, right? So hear the accent. So tell us, we want to get to know you a little bit. So tell us, where did you grow up? And, you know, give us some of your skinny, if you like.
Yeah, for sure. I was born in a place called Eastbourne in Sussex, which is on the south coast of England. And then I spent the first 24, 25 years of my life there. Then I lived in Australia for 2 years in the western suburbs of Sydney, which was great, and had a young child. So we came back to the UK, and we're now in Manchester, just in the sort of the southern suburbs of Cheshire, just south of Manchester. And And yeah, so we've moved around a bit, but for all its faults, you know, we love the UK. We've got family here, but it's wet, but we love it.
So what took you out of England all the way to Australia?
So I went and did a youth work role in a church over in Australia. So we had a friend that sadly passed away, actually, who was doing that role. And we were asked to go over and help, you know, when they kind of had that sort of tragedy. So we knew we had a good relationship with people over there. And my wife was Australian as well. So it helped with the visa side of things. And so, yeah, I did some youth work over there. We wanted to travel a bit as well. I'd, like I said, worked as a real estate agent for a number of years, and you know, I had worked myself into the ground quite a bit. So we were looking for something, you know, overseas that was a bit less stressful, a bit warmer, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, did that for a couple of years.
So you know, when I introduced you, I said, you know, it was lawyer, then real estate. So I sense a search, like you're searching for something.
Yeah.
So now you're running Brand Uni, which is, so are you guys selling, or are you a resource, the teaching people?
Well, we sell, yeah, separately to it. But then Brand Builder University is a separate resource. Yeah, it's two separate things. So I'm in the trenches selling, you know, running brands. And then we're kind of teaching from what we're learning in the trenches with Brand Builder University. And it's, we've got a number of different courses, and we do coaching and stuff like that. But we've also got, you know, YouTube channel, and, you know, we write articles that help with that. And we've got our own podcast as well, called the Brand Builder Show. And we're trying to build it to be a resource you know, for the community. Yeah.
So I'm kind of trying to, you know, having the engineering background, deconstructing things. So I'm searching, I'm seeing some kind of a search, you know, always interested in searching stuff, the unknown, and also helping. Those are the underlying themes. That is that right? Is that your is that what motivates you?
Yeah, for sure. I'm passionate about people. I think you know, I like I said, I've gone through the challenges of a lack of direction, a lack of understanding about what I should be doing with my life, and trading so much time for a job that, you know, is fulfilling in some aspects, but not what I wanted to spend the rest of my life doing. And, you know, I talk with so many people that find themselves in that spot. And I suppose my, you know, the discontent that I have, that I'm trying to help other people get past, is this idea that, you know, we just spend so much of our lives trading it for something that we don't really want to do, but we just have to, because that's, you know, money makes the world go round, and we trade so much of our time simply for money to pay the bills. And we just repeat that process. And I think we've got this one life. We've only got a certain amount of time, you know, in life. And, you know, it's such a shame that so many people waste so much of it just to get by, just to pay the bills. And so that's my mission, I suppose, is to help as many people get free from that as possible, to, you know, to create an income stream that isn't dependent on how they spend their time, so that then they can choose how they spend their time.
So is that what you were doing in your earlier life?
No, I was definitely trading time for money, for sure. You know, I was working 60, 70, 80 hours a week as a real estate agent. And, you know, there's, of course, certain opportunities that come with that. But, you know, I had a kid that was born, and I barely saw him. You know, I'd leave the house at 7, get home at 7. And, you know, I didn't get to see my kids. And I just got to the point where I felt like this isn't worth it. You know, the quote unquote secure salary that comes with that is, you know, is not worth the what I'm missing out on. Now, some people, of course, like that.
So, you know, what I always wonder is this, you know, we are human beings. You know, one of the things I always say is, present a problem to a human being. The immediate response is to find a solution. The immediate solution that they come up with is usually the most complicated. They don't, you know, they don't think it through to make it simpler. So we have these tendencies to create complications around our lives. So My question to you is, how do you go from being a kid and then growing up basically debt-free? You have nothing. Everything is done for you. And then finally, you start your life. At that point, you have no expenses. You have no nothing. How do you go from that and end up as someone who has to work so many hours because you need to pay the bills? So what causes that transition?
I think it's a lack of financial education. You know, what I wouldn't give, Nick, to go back to when I was 14, 15, 16 and understand the financial principles that I understand now, to not spend everything that I earn, to invest in my future. The understanding that it's so very basic, I know this, but it took me so long to understand that if what I need to do is take a percentage of what I bring in and invest that in things that are going to bring an income, whether I work or whether I don't, you know, passive. I know that's a sort of a swear word in the entrepreneurial, you know, environment, passive income, but, you know, take what I earn and put as much as possible for as long as possible into investment vehicles that will earn me a return, whether I work or whether I don't, so that then I'm not trading my time for that money. It's my money is working for me, making more money. It's a basic principle, but nobody teaches it to young people. And so we earn our money. We spend 100% of our money. Some of us spend more than 100% of our money each month, and that's how we get into debt. And we just allow our expenses to inflate to the level of our income, and we never create a financial stability for our future. But our society depends on the majority of people not doing that, because otherwise nobody would, you know, do some of the roles that need to be done, right? So it's frustrating, but I think
it's a consumption economy, right? It's a consumption economy. So yeah. What happens, you know, it's now decades ago, but I still remember it like yesterday, 9/11, right? Mm. Changed the world.
Yeah.
So what did the president say at the time? Go out, spend, go shopping.
Mm.
So that was the thing. So, I mean, it was said for the right reasons. But what I'm getting at is, do not let events like this change your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Go back to what you were, which is shopping.
Yeah. 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 Crazy.
So, and of course, if people don't shop, then the jobs get lost.
Yeah.
When the jobs are lost, then people have no money, then it becomes the fastest route to self-destruction. So it's then the government needs to step in, and then how does the government do it? Not really a good job to do anything really quickly, like businesses. So it's becomes vicious circle. But I love everything you said. I mean, I cannot tell you product potency trifecta.
Mm.
That's perfect. So thank you, Ben. This was great. So tell us, how can people reach you? Give us your contact information.
Yeah, yeah. Everything that we do for helping Amazon sellers and brand builders is just at brandbuilderuni.com. Brandbuilderuni.com. We're on all social media. I'm on Twitter, just my name, Ben Donovan. And then, yeah, we have a podcast called The Brand Builder Show, which is on iTunes and everything like that.
Great. This was excellent. And I'm sure some of the listeners will put it to good use. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And this brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Be sure and subscribe, rate, and review our show. And be sure and share an episode with a friend. And thank you so much for being with us today. We'll see you next week here on Amazon Legends.